Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
My default answer is about 6 weeks.
That's fair. And so that's mid-May, pretty much.
Yeah. Though, you know, we're talking about Story, who's, you know, been historically interesting over the first half a week of the season. But, you know, if you take a player like, you know, take a player like JD Martinez from 3 years ago.
Good example.
Not, you know, not someone who was, you know, leading the league in anything. He was just hitting. It when I say 6 weeks, I mean that's when I feel comfortable that he's sort of established his value in my mind. But if you want any of these players, you're going to have to jump on them much faster than that.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 85 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of the BP Fantasy staff, and I'm joined as always by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer. Brett, how's it going?
Good. How you doing, George?
I am well. And Mike Gianella, veteran of the BP Fantasy staff. Mike, what's up?
I'm doing well, George. How are you? We're here. We have baseball. We're excited.
The 2016 regular season is underway. Baseball is back. We've got a ton to talk about. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. But first, let's start off with a little housekeeping. As always, you can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. If you're not a subscriber, you should be. Mike's first expert fab review of the season is up right now. I'm going to have some stuff early next week, and the entire BP Fantasy staff is cranking out some pretty stellar content every week as usual. So subscribe today. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's two S's and two L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru, and Mike is at Mike Gianella. You can email us at flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. And finally, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or whatever app you're using to listen to this podcast right now. Every subscription, rating, and review helps us out tremendously, and we really appreciate the support we've gotten from all of you. And most importantly, we want to hear from you, our listeners, about the show. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive right into the fab bidding for Tout Wars and Labor. Plenty of Trevor Story talk coming up. I know you're excited for it. We'll be right back. And we're back. We're going to start off with Tout Wars Mixed. Brett is in Tout Wars. Brett, you're in first place right now, correct?
I am tied for first place right now with Nando DeFino. It is only 3.5 days into the season, so clearly I do not follow my own advice of not checking the standings in the first month of the season.
We're going to have to get those duck boats ready for you. Did you plan the parade route yet?
Not all of it. 75% of it.
That's good. You got to get started on that early. That's the main thing to do. Speaking of getting started early, let's talk about the fab for Tout Mixed. We'll start with your bids, Brett, because I don't have in front of me, because all I have is Mike's article. But take us through everything that went down, who you bid on, who you got, everything like that. Give us the rundown.
Sure. So I had a couple of guys hit the DL in Zach Wheeler and Kevin Gausman. So I was able to pick up two players for this week. I reserved Aaron Hill, who made his way into my starting lineup because I also DL'd Andre Ethier. But thankfully, I did not have to play Aaron Hill this week, and I picked up Arizona half center fielder du jour, Chris Owings, for $61, and that is a $1,000 fab budget now. So that was about a little over 6% of my budget. So you know, I clearly seem to like Owings more than most. He had a really strong spring. He plays in a nice home park. He was terrible last year, but he has real prospect pedigree. He's got some power potential. He's got some speed potential, and with AJ Pollock done for what's looking more and more like the season, you know, he's going to get some play between the middle infield spots where he was probably going to get, you know, a couple days a week there, and now center field too, with splitting some time with Socrates Brito. And I think between all of those positions, he's going to end up playing, you know, 4 to 5 days a week with triple eligibility. And given what I've been able to surmise from Tout so far in my first season, especially with the fact that there are midweek activations and stuff, that, you know, playing Owings now is not, I don't think it's ideal. I don't think he's a fantastic option, but having Owings as the first guy off my bench in a perfect world, I think is great, just because there's a lot of flexibility there that I don't quite have right now. The second move that I made was reserving Wade Miley, who got not quite bombed, but mildly bombed in Texas today, and I picked up Nate Jones of the Chicago White Sox for $0. Is this the nice thing about Tout as opposed to labor, where I can add someone like Jones for $0 and it doesn't really matter? I just wanted to sit Miley for this week, and I had nobody better to work with. So Jones is a guy who I think is one of the better middle relievers out there. I think he could put up some really strong ratios, strikeout, you know, close to 90 batters, I didn't pick him up because I thought I'd get any saves out of him, but if anything were to happen to David Robertson, he would be the next guy in line. So that was it. I also put in bids on Joey Ricard, Jabari Blash, and David Freese, although I didn't feel particularly good about any of them, and certainly not nearly as good as some of the people who actually purchased them. So there were, I'm sorting through here to see the final bids, but
while you sort, Wade Miley, 80 grade beard.
Yes.
Not even close. It's like, it's almost a 90. 85? Is 85 a grade?
It's really good. 85 is not a grade. Neither is 75.
It should be. It should be, though, for Wade Miley. I'll make an exception. Yeah.
It's confusing that 75 is not a grade, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, mildly. Really.
I can see why 85 isn't a grade, but, you know, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I found it. Al Melchior was the one who won Joey Ricard. He spent $113 on him. Al also spent $222 on Juan Nicasio, which is quite a heavy freight, but he looked pretty good today.
He looked really good.
So that, you know, power to him. That looks like a move that is certainly paying off so far. We'll see how long he holds up for and how long that lasts. But the other big bid was Travis Shaw, who went, and see, this is my inexperience in the league. I'm having trouble finding the easiest way to see who actually picked up these players. It was Scott Pinkowski who picked up Travis Shaw for $149. So I decided not to make a bid for Shaw, even though I have Pablo Sandoval. I don't need two guys like that on my bench. That helps nobody.
So I probably should have started off with this, but this is going to be our format every week pretty much in season. We'll have guests on as well pretty regularly this year, but we're going to go through the expert fabs in fab bidding and tout and then labor as well. And the one big change is the fab dollar figure everyone has to spend in tout. It's now $1,000. It stayed the same in labor. It's still $100 there. So Brett, really quickly, does your strategy change at all with that number being 1,000 now? I mean, you mentioned it. You saw a couple pretty big bids on, you know, guys like Nicasio. But does your strategy change at all? And really, what's your general approach this early in the season when it comes to bidding on guys early on?
It doesn't really change. I mean, the one thing that it does when you go from $100 budget to $1,000 budget, you kind of mentally want to just do the metric system conversion on that. And say, okay, if this was a $6 bid in the old format, I'll just make it a $60 bid in the new format. And it doesn't really work like that so much. It's a little bit more skewed. It almost works like inflation in auctions. Because there's going to be money in the end. The guys who get purchased for, you know, $1, $5, $7 aren't really going to move the needle a whole lot. I honestly haven't figured out what the equivalent really is. This is the first time I am playing in a league with a $1,000 fab budget. But, you know, my bid on Owings probably would have been $5 in the old format, but it was $61 in this format. So there's a translation there. Mike, have you figured out sort of what the translation is that you're comfortable with this, or is it am I making a mountain out of a molehill here?
No, you're not, and I hadn't, and we'll get to this with Tout NL, but I some of my bids or some of my ideas behind what to bid, and I actually didn't really bid anything. And I'll get into that, but some of the ideas of what I was going to bid on guys were just completely off.
Yeah, it's going to be a learning experience for everyone, and doubly for me because I'm getting used to the league entirely. So let's talk a little bit about Arizona before we move on to other interesting players. So what do you guys make of this? Socrates Brito was owned. He was reserved in the auction, so he was not available to be purchased. How do you guys think the playing time shakes out, both between second base, shortstop, third base, center field, and left field in Arizona? Mike, I know you have one or two of these guys on your tout team also, right? You have Yasmani Tomas on your team, right?
I have Yasmani Tomas in tout. I have John Segura in CBS in tout, and I have Nick Ahmed in CBS. And you know, for our listeners, these are NL only, in case you're wondering why I'm crazy and have all these players. But yeah, I what I tend to think, it seems that Segura is going to play every day, whether it's at short or second, as he did today on today being Wednesday day we're recording. And what it really looks like, they're going to give Owings a fairly regular shot in center and kind of cycle Brito. And I believe Nick Drury also played the outfield today. So I think at the beginning they're going to kind of mix and match and see what Owings looks like and fool around with him out there and give him a good number of at-bats and get to a comfort level. He hadn't played center field professionally, I believe that's correct. But he's very athletic. As you pointed out with your bid, he's somebody who I think could be a solid player offensively, or solid enough. The average is never going to be great, but he steals and he hits home runs. I'm okay with Brito. I've got nothing against him. You know, something about Tomas, I've watched him closely, and you know, you guys, when we talked about my tout team, talked about him. Tomas's swing right now looks really good, and he still hasn't shown the power, but I think it can come. Maybe he'll never be a 30 home run guy like some expected, but 20 home runs could be realistic. To me, it's all about the endurance with Tomas. He struggled in the second half last year, and some of that was just because, you know, he came over from Cuba in a very difficult situation, and you know, I think there was some fatigue there, which should have been expected. So eventually, I believe that Tomas is going to get most of the time, and Owings and Brito will split. But if Owings can play center, they're probably going to go with him and use Brito more as a backup. And you know, I don't have any insights or inside information there, but that's kind of what I see happening.
Yeah, I think I kind of like both of them in deep mixed leagues. So, you know, Brito is someone who could play, you know, play 3 or 4 days a week and steal a handful of bases and do sort of Ender Inciarte kind of things. Owings obviously has the, you know, has the power speed that he can unleash, at least, you know, we're not talking George Springer type power speed. We're talking more like if everything works out, you know, 15-15 type combination. Yeah, it's going to be an adjustment for him. I mean, you're right. I mean, Mike, he's never played center field as a professional. He literally played one game in left field as a 19-year-old in the Cal League, and that is his entire professional outfield experience. So I really, and I'm with you on Tomas. I really like Tomas this year. I think he's been a little too forgotten. I think he's certainly better than he showed last year, and even if he never is as good as I think people thought he could have been coming out of Cuba, I think he's absolutely a pretty solid mixed league play at this point, especially with the dual eligibility.
Yeah, here's the thing about Tomas is for what the Diamondbacks paid for him and for what the ceiling is, I don't see why they don't at least try to give him the opportunity to fail. I look at Brito as a fourth outfielder, second division regular ceiling, more of a he is what he is kind of player. And I know people got really excited by him and he had a good spring, but almost everybody in Arizona had a good spring because of where they play and you know where they train. So that's kind of my take on it. Could Tomas fail? Sure. You know, beyond deep mixed, I don't think you really want to be, you know, speculating or playing around with Tomas or really Owings for that matter. Beyond, you know, I'd say in a 12-team mix, Owings is still someone I'd shy away from. But you know, as all our listeners know, and people new to the show, and hopefully we have some new people to the show, we're mainly focusing on deeper mixed and only leagues here.
Peter O'Brien in center field would be interesting, as in how bad do you think it would be from a defensive run saved?
Can't possibly be worse than him behind the plate.
Well, and if there's a team that's going to do that, it's the Diamondbacks, who really just seem to push the envelope, you know, every single damn day.
Paul Goldschmidt can play center, right? Didn't he do that once in the minors? We were talking about this actually at one point in the spring, early on, weren't we?
Did he? I don't know.
We talked about this. I feel like we did. He played like one game in high A in center field or something.
That's correct, actually. He did.
That's awesome. All right, we need to get moving on or we're never going to get through all of this. How do you want to go through labor, Mike? Do you want to talk about your bids first and what you did and then get to some of the bigger names, or what do you want to do?
That's usually what we do, and it's labor mixed. That's Brett and I co-own or co-manage that team. Mm-hmm. And it'll bring us to our big topic in labor mix. So our only bid for the week was on Trevor Story. You draft in mid-February for mix. The first transaction period isn't until the day before opening day on Saturday. This year, we were lucky in that at least before the first FAB period, we didn't have any injuries. And as Drubal Cabrera was possibly might have gone to DL, well, we had injuries. It was like C.J. Wilson, Zach Wheeler, who we knew about. Andrew Miller, we survived a scare with him. So no significant injuries. So we did decide to bid on Trevor Story, but there goes Aaron Nola's win as I'm watching this. So we did this. You can edit that out and add out any cursing that might come later.
Oh, so, no, that's staying in.
That's staying in.
Well, that's staying.
We did decide to bid on Trevor's story, but we decided to put in a fairly conservative bid. Now, keep in mind, this is before he did anything. We bid $12 of the $100 budget in that league. And something else to keep in mind about Tout compared to labor. Tout, as Brett mentioned, has $0 bids. You cannot do that in labor. So you have to be kind of careful. If you're aggressive and you use all your money, you cannot replace anybody through free agency. You have to do it through your reserve list. We thought 12 was fair. It turned out to be the fifth highest bid. And Jake Seeley of Roto Experts bought Story for 43. When I wrote it up, I said that seemed aggressive, particularly for Jake, whose offense also looked like it was in good shape and had a lot of depth. You know, obviously right now that looks like a great move. I have to say, you know, even if Story, you know, does better than expected, and even if, you know, Jose Reyes never comes back to the Rockies, you have to think he's going to cool off. Brett, what do you think of that bid right now compared to 3 days ago? I know it's kind of an obvious question, but do you still think that's a high bid or a little too high, or do you think Jake made a strong move here?
I do think it's still a high bid. I am part of that, although, you know, if he's hitting like this, it doesn't matter what happens with Jose Reyes. They're going to find room to play him somewhere, quite possibly at second base over DJ LeMahieu. But, you know, I'm going to be Captain Obvious over here, but I don't think Trevor Story's going to hit 200 home runs this year. Honestly, I'd still be surprised if he got to 22. I think that's still best case scenario. I don't think Jose Reyes is going to be suspended for that long. I think he'll be back before Memorial Day, maybe sooner. I know word of that suspension is probably going to get handed down later this week, but I can't imagine that with the you know, with what's going on with his trial, that the suspension is going to be any longer than Aroldis Chapman's. That's sort of the precedent now. So if it's 30 games starting at some point this weekend, then you're looking at like the third week of May, him coming back.
Yeah, and maybe he goes to on the equivalent of some rehab games. But even then, I've been looking at June 1st as kind of a conservative estimate on Reyes. And you know, I took Reyes in both those NL only leagues that I'm in. And you know, the other possibility is that, and to get back to Story, the other possibility is that Reyes gets traded, or I think less likely gets cut. But at some point, for all of the money he's owed and for the fact, and we've discussed Reyes on this show before, for the fact that Reyes is certainly not cooked as a player, even if he's declining, it's very difficult to see the Rockies just completely giving up on him, particularly considering the contract.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's pretty much impossible at this point. I mean, the Rockies' best bet as an organization is to play Reyes and hope that he plays well enough that they can trade him. I mean, he was hitting, when they acquired him from Toronto, he was hitting 285 with, you know, the 16 stolen bases and in 69 games. So he's not done. He's not the Jose Reyes that he used to be, but you know, in Colorado, I think if he plays, he's going to hit. And, you know, there's just not, you know, there's no place in the outfield for Trevor Story. They can't put him at third base. So they'd have to get pretty creative to keep him in the lineup. And they are not going to want to cut into Reyes's playing time, because they're going to need to showcase him if they want to shed any of that money. And the fact that there is still, but he's signed for $22 million each this year and next year, and then there's a $4 million buyout for right. 2018. So he's yeah. owed, if they cut him when he came off the suspended list, they would be swallowing about $40 million.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna do that.
Seems no. Considering the franchise, that just seems impossible.
Well, and you know, yeah. putting. He's healthy, and you know, putting aside how although it's difficult to do, you know, putting aside how we all feel about domestic violence and, you know, the terrible things it does to families and to society, it is difficult to simply decide, you know, well, we're just never going to play you again and we're going to cut you, you know, based on something that didn't go to trial and based on something that, at least from Major League Baseball's perspective, he will actually be penalized. So, yes, it does seem that once this kind of all dies down, that Reyes will come back. And it seems likely, I would say, that he will play for Colorado. You know, stories, you know, the thing about this is, let's say it is June 1st. On June 1st, we'll have a clearer picture of Trevor Story and what he's doing. You know, if he's, you know, obviously I get a home run every day, but you know, if Trevor Story has 12 home runs and is hitting, you know, on June 1st and is hitting, or 15 home runs and is hitting 300 and, you know, looks terrific, they're going to find a place for him to play. You know, if he slumps and cools off, which is certainly also a possibility, you know, he could wind up in a diminished role. So we'll see how this plays out. To kind of get back to Fab and the mechanics of this, it looks like a better bid for Jake than I thought it did at the time. And, you know, so far I have to give him credit. You know, that's a nice first week to get from somebody in a 15-team mixed league, without a doubt, or really any league, obviously.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's, you know, he's been doing things that I certainly did not expect him to do.
He's doing things that no one in baseball history has ever done. He's the first player ever to hit 4 home runs in his first 4 games. That's never happened. So his value literally will never be higher than it is right now. We're recording this on Wednesday night. I mean, it's never going to be higher. I cannot imagine that.
And I saw a trade. I think Jeff Erickson of RotoWire and other writers on Twitter have been asking people to send trades or proposals. And there was a trade that it was a 3-for-3, and two of the components on each side was even, so it was, or close to even. So it was essentially Kluber for Story.
Well,
so it's like, now granted, I think the two pieces were a little better going the other way, but still, you're talking about an ace in any format, and I know there's the AL discount compared to an NL ace, but you're talking about Corey Kluber essentially for Trevor Story. If you're in a league like that and you can make a deal like that, obviously do it. Even if Trevor Story does hit 25 to 30 home runs this year, that's got to be the upside.
So do you guys want to have the conversation now about when you start to really look at the numbers with guys? Because I'm not going to let 4 games change my opinion of Trevor Story dramatically. Do I have much higher expectations now than maybe I did a month ago? Sure. But I'm not dramatically overhauling my view of Trevor Story based on what he's done in 4 games. How long does it take for you to really buy into a guy's performance early on? Because I think it's different with veteran guys. Like Robinson Cano is the obvious example. Like, that's legit. But especially with younger guys like this who don't have any sort of track record at the major league level, how long do you have to wait and see before you really change your opinion? I'll start with Brett.
My default answer is about 6 weeks.
That's fair. And so that's mid-May,
pretty much. Yeah. Though that is not, it's a little deceiving just because I think that, you know, if you're, you know, we're talking about Story, who's, you know, been historically interesting over the first half a week of the season. But, you know, if you take a player like, you know, take a player like JD Martinez from 3 years ago.
Good example.
Not, you know, not someone who was, you know, leading the league in anything. He was just hitting. When I say 6 weeks, I mean that's when I feel comfortable that he's sort of established his value in my mind. But if you want any of these players, you're going to have to jump on them much faster than that. And you might have to drop someone who you might not have thought you would drop for him before, but that just means the person's value is at an incline. If you're in a 12 team league, you're clearly dropping somebody for Story right now, right? I mean, who are you dropping for Trevor Story? Are you dropping John Segura for Trevor Story?
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Well,
I think the batting average upside is a little higher.
Well, here's one. I could see dropping someone if he's in your middle, like Elvis Andrus, who is mostly steals, doesn't have much power, high ground balls. I know he hit a few home runs last year. That's probably the kind of guy in a 12-team mix is my third middle that I'd look to drop for someone like Story.
Yeah, I mean, this. I wrote about this with Juan Nicasio in a piece I wrote about a week ago at Baseball Prospectus that, you know, it's hard to, because you have to buy in so early if you're going to really get the benefits of that type of a breakout. You have to invest so early that you almost can't wait to see how it plays out to have enough of a sample to say, well, the adjustments he's made are really working out. So it's difficult, I think.
Yeah. So I think this is probably enough Trevor Story talk at this point, right? We should probably move on to the next chapter. Name on the list.
Yeah.
Aww. Well,
the next name on the list, and we still have to go through everybody on this list because it's a long list, is Tyler White. Jake was busy this week. He bought White for $18. And, you know, we discussed White a little bit pre-show. He does have third base eligibility. You know, I pointed out he's somebody who's always kind of been knocked as, or has been knocked as, a non-prospect and has been old for his levels, but he's performed at every level. And I'm not a big believer in White by any means, but he deserves this opportunity. He's in a good lineup. 18 struck me as a little bit high for him. Some of this goes back to philosophy in these expert leagues. I will get to this with my tout NL bids, and it sounded, Brett, like you were fairly conservative in tout mixed, although there are $0 bids. Jake spent 61 combined on these two hitters, and some of this mentality, I believe, comes from the fact that Jake, from what I've seen, is more of a mixed player, is even more of a 10-12 team mixed player, where more free agents come through. And it doesn't really matter if you blow your money early, because if you have $0 bids or low bids or waiver claims on a standard mix, you can kind of get guys. You know, putting White aside for a second, this strategy, is it something you've ever employed, or are you more likely, regardless of the format, to be a little bit more conservative, you know, generally speaking, you know, from the get-go?
It really depends on the $0 bid thing, because in leagues where you do have $0 bids, I get pretty aggressive. I mean, my big home league, I have a sort of a running tradition of spending a ton of fab in the first week, you know, partially because the rules are a little interesting, because you can pay to stash, so you can grab guys that you can't grab guys that are in the minors, but you can grab guys that are on the DL and stash them, and then make additional DL moves on top of them. So for in that league, it's $100 fab with $0 bids, and I spent $41 in the first transaction period. So it's I'm certainly not afraid to spend fab. It's just that this is a little aggressive for a league that has no $0 bids. You don't want to be stuck at the end without a net. I mean, we almost got stuck without a net at the end of last year.
Well, we actually were for I think the last 4 to 6 weeks, but. Was it Sano or Schwarber, whoever it was, this ties into half this conversation. So we decided to go that way. But some of the reason we did that is at that point we knew the path. We knew we had the three aces, and, you know, and we're not going to rehash, you know, our title every week. But, you know, we had the three aces. We knew we needed offense. We knew that no one better was coming through. It was past the trade deadline, I believe. So we kind of decided, it's a mixed league, so there was no trade deadline to think about when players coming over. So we kind of decided to take the plunge. The difficulty about doing this in April, it's really hard right now to see the path. You know, we can joke about we're in first, we're in sixth. It isn't until, to your point about 6 weeks, Brett, it really isn't until mid-May to me that you get a feel for the league. And you kind of know, you know, I'd say, you know, if you have a lot of injuries in mid to late April, you might know you're not going to win. But in terms of knowing you're going to win, it isn't until mid-May that I get a feel like I've really got a real chance in this league. or, you know, it's an iffy chance. And that's why moves like this to me are a little bit risky.
All right. To kind of wrap up, Tyler White, it's June 1st. Is AJ Reed the first baseman for the Houston Astros? Yes or no, Mike?
Well, yes, if he performs.
Brett?
What was the date again?
June 1st. Is no. AJ Reed? Huh?
Oh, is AJ Reed or is Tyler
AJ
White?
Reed. AJ Reed. Is AJ Reed yes. The first baseman?
Yes, AJ Reed is the first baseman, June 1st.
Okay, so 18 seems kind of high. Unless White is the DH. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. Do you guys want to talk Juan Nicasio? We kind of already covered the Arizona situation with Chris Owings. Do you guys want to touch on Nicasio briefly? Or
yeah, let's do. There's other guys here, but let's do Nicasio and then move to NL. Unless you see someone, Brett, here, you know, lower on the list that you want to touch on. But yeah, Nicasio went for $16. And there were a lot of bids, and the next highest bid was 11. And I here, 16% of a budget. But here I like the bid. And some of the reason that I do like the bid is I like the ability to cycle someone, even if Nicasio didn't quite work out. He had a great night tonight. But even if he doesn't quite work out and is only okay, good park, good situation, a lot of softer NL lineups. If he turns out to be only a guy with a 3.5 or somewhere around there, or maybe a 3.8, you can cycle him through against some of the weaker National League lineups. And there are a lot of those lineups this year. Something else I pointed out in the article, you know, he had a 5.22 ERA at Coors lifetime. So even if tonight in spring training isn't completely indicative and Ray Searidge hasn't found an elixir to turn Juan Nicasio, you know, into the next Clayton Kershaw, there's still some potential here for fantasy, and I kind of dig him in a deeper mixed league with reserve lists where you can stream back and forth.
Oh, yeah, and deeper, absolutely. I worry about the platoon splits, though. He's really terrible against left-hand batters, like just abysmal. So that's the only thing that really kind of concerns me with him.
That's fair.
Any other guys on this list or go to NL?
I think we can probably go to the NL, but yeah. I'm just spitballing. I mean, you make a really good point about Nicasio, but there wasn't too much left-handed thump in the Cardinals lineup today.
No,
and Brandon Moss might be. Done as a productive player.
That gives me some sads.
Yeah. Colton Wong is fine, but Colton Wong reached base 2 out of 3 times against Nicasio, and he gave up a home run to Jeremy Hazelbaker.
There are some real glaring things with Nicasio's profile that are terrifying that I don't think he's going to be an ace or anything. Could he be this year's like Marco Estrada? I mean, guy who comes out of nowhere and actually is a top 40 pitcher. I mean, I could see that, but yeah, I don't think this is Corey Kluber or something like that. That's not what this is.
Yeah, I hope I didn't give that impression I was talking about him. That's kind of what I see as the upside for Nicasio with three, you know, somebody who's decent and someone where the park and the matchups, you know, particularly if he's pitching against the Reds or the Brewers or the Phillies. I'm not going to run through the bad National League teams every week, but there's a lot of that kind of potential with Nicasio where the numbers, you know, if you're looking at FIP or if you're looking, I should say, at DRA, Nicasio could be higher, but as we all know, most people don't play in a DRA league. They play in a league that uses ERA. And, you know, if you want, you're talking about Nicasio versus someone like Estrada for this year, based on matchups and parks and et cetera, he could very well be better. And I think I'd expect him to be better.
The strikeouts will be there. He's a fun matchup guy in a deep league. All right, Tout Wars NL. Mike, you're the defending champion. Take us through your process here for week one.
So I made a mistake. In Tout Wars, there were three games. Well, you know, it's the first week. So there were three games on Sunday, and I missed an email because I was actually helping Peter Kreutzer. I was auctioneered for the American Dreams League, which Peter's in and Alex Patton's in. It's the second oldest fantasy league or rotisserie league in the country. So that was kind of cool thing for me to do. But anyway, I put in a bid to replace Michael Morse. But because the Pirates were playing on Sunday, the bids were nullified. And I was at this auction, so it left me scrambling a little bit. And it put me in a position where I didn't make a move to replace him. And the bids I put in were to replace just Monty Grandal for the week because he's on the disabled list. And because I have four catchers, I could replace him with anybody. But I put in very timid bids. I put in a $20 bid on Hinojosa, Dyler Hinojosa, mainly because I have three closers and didn't need a fourth. I probably would have bid more and gotten him if I had no closers or had one closer just to roll the dice on him. He went for, we'll jump around a little bit here. He went for $69 to Steve Gardner of USA Today, which given that Steve spent six on Andrew Bailey at auction and Bailey got sent to the minors, I could see why Steve did that. Although Hinojosa did not look very good tonight in blowing the save to the Reds.
that has not been very nice for Steve so far.
Well, it has not been nice.
That's why we tell you to steer clear of murky closer situations sometimes.
There's murky closer situations, and then there's like the Mariana Trench, and then there's Philadelphia. I mean, it is just an absolute show.
True dumpster fire.
George, you might be closing for the Phillies in 2 months.
I'll tell you what, I've seen Hinojosa pitch a ton in my lifetime, like more AAA innings than I'm comfortable talking about on this show. Just saying. He was with the Red Sox, and I saw him maybe 50 times in Pawtucket. So, I know what that ride is like. Not great.
Yeah, honestly, that's a bullpen I'd steer clear of. But if you are, David Hernandez looked okay tonight. It's not a bullpen in anything but an NL only I would even bother with. It reminds me of the Astros the first year that they were in their rebuild, and they had a bunch of relievers. I don't think anyone got over 18 saves. I could be wrong on that. But more importantly, the rate stats were terrible, and I don't think anyone in an only earned over 12 or 10 or something like that. It's a really bad place that you just don't want to be.
All right, yeah. Moving on. And okay. On that note,
yeah. So, I my secondary bid to go after Grandal was Trace Thompson. I bid 20, or I would. Well, I would have bid 20, but I raced the bid because of the error I mentioned before. But it wouldn't have mattered. He went for 37. He's kind of interesting, but again, we're talking about an only versus a mix. I don't know how much he's going to play. It's more of a bet against Carl Crawford's health, which is often not a bad bet. And then I wound up getting Travis Wood for zero. The way I'm looking at that swingman spot and the way I was looking at the National League this week, there wasn't a hitter available who jumped out at me as somebody who was good or decent. So I decided to try to get a reliever on a team where, yes, Jake Arrieta and John Lester can go deep, but I thought there might be a cheap win. And I made this point about Wood in the piece. Travis Wood, as a reliever last year, now you guys all know, and this is not going to be a pun, I've got a bit of a hard on for Wood. I've always gone after him. He put up a 2.95 ERA and a 2.53 FIP as a reliever last year and struck out about 11 per nine. He's fine in the role. The velocity went up the way it always goes up. I'm not going to overstate it. He's Travis Wood. I'm not expecting saves. But relievers in NL only are so key, as opposed to picking up the crummy starter or the guy who, like Williams Perez, for example, went for 11. A guy like that who could just blow up your ERA. So that was my process in the NL. Very quiet week. I only had the Grandal injury. I ran all six starters that I auctioned out there, including Taylor Jungman, who I was a little reluctant about and kind of looked okay today, but managed not to really get damaged despite the fact that he only struck out one guy. First week in an only, I'm not a big believer in making a big bid unless you really have a glaring or desperate need. And if you auction well, or if you don't have a lot of lousy injury luck, you shouldn't have that kind of need.
Rob, this is kind of a mess in terms of the names actually who got picked up. Neftali Feliz, Matt Joyce, Ross Stripling. Is there anyone specific that you want to touch on, Mike? Or
no, Brett? What I want to touch on, and I'm sorry if I cut you off there, Brett, I want to touch on the process a little bit. This is what I was talking about earlier about people fumbling around. The $1,000, so Matt Cain is a $7 bid if you translate it, or a little bit over that, and he was the highest bid at 72. We used something called Vickery last year, and the Vickery bid system allowed for the highest or the second highest bid plus one turned into the winning bid. And I think that's where people struggled a little bit with the fact, not so much $1,000, but, you know, Neftali Feliz went for 67 and no one else bid on him. So last year he would have been a dollar. This year, Phil Hertz of Baseball HQ gets Feliz for 67. And you know, he also spent 72 on Kane. The thing about this $1,000 system, it's a lot of money, so in a sense it doesn't matter. You can always adjust in future weeks by bidding low or bidding next to nothing. My feeling about Fab has always been, if there's a guy you really want and it's a large amount of money like this, you know, by all means, you know, bid $200, $300. And only in particular, there aren't going to be many opportunities to really get a guy you want or even see that guy, and you're going to be bidding low. For the most part, though, your bid should be very low just because there is that variability. And, you know, Matt Joyce, someone could have bid three or four on him and gotten him because he's another player who no one else bid on.
Brett, is there anyone interesting you want to touch on? Chris Hatcher $2.
No. $1. I think Colin Walsh could be kind of interesting in an OBP league. But Scooter Jeanette's actually hitting to start the year. So he's going to kind of get hidden on that roster, I think. But if he struggles, or if they just decide to scrap the Aaron Hill plan or experiment, whatever you want to call it, Walsh could be, he can't really do a whole lot other than get on base, but he could be a kind of surprising 350, 360 on base guy if he got some regular playing time. He's just not very good, though.
On a scale of Edwin Jackson to Jerickson Profar, how good is Ross Stripling? Should we care?
No.
Okay.
He's passable for an only, but that's really about it.
I'm asking for a friend, not because I have him in TDGX or anything. Are we good on NL?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't have anything else. NL was quiet, and there's some more interesting names in the AL anyway. So for new listeners, neither one of us participate in the AL. We're already in enough expert leagues. But there were a couple of really big buys there, and I want to talk about the three guys who went for over 100. The first one, and if I'm mispronouncing this, please correct me. I'm not the dynasty guy.
It's Sean Manaea.
It is Manaea, and I would have mispronounced it, so thank you for saving me. So Sean Manaea went for $201 to Patrick Davitt of Baseball HQ. And what's kind of interesting about this is, unless I miss something, there are no plans for him to be called up or in the wake of Sonny Gray's food poisoning or some of the other things happening in Oakland. I don't think he's going to be up in the next week or two.
Nope.
So this is a stash, right?
Absolutely, it's a stash. Oh, Oakland is not in the business of calling up prospects before they need to. So this is, he's not going to be up before June.
Right.
He is older, though. He's like 25 almost, I think.
True. Although unless Oakland unexpectedly gets off to a big start, there probably isn't a pressing need to, there isn't going to be a pressing need for him in the rotation. So anyway, this is another process thing where I like the stash. I'm fine with that. One and again, in an AL, if you're talking about a ninth or if you're using the swingman, a tenth slot, it's almost irrelevant who you have there if you take zero innings. As an example, in the NL, I decided to carry Steven Matz this week, even though there was a possibility that he wouldn't pitch, figuring that if he threw an inning in relief in the Kansas City series, it'd be fine. If he didn't, it would be fine, too. It is the question here. I do wonder, and I'm also reluctant to talk a little bit about experts who aren't here to go through their process, but I did kind of wonder what Davitt was thinking with the amount of the bid. Just because it was a stash, it felt to me like there was a $5 backup bid, but it felt like you could have bid like 30 or 40 and gotten him easily.
Manaea does have an awesome afro, or he did this winter.
Yeah. He's really good. I really, really, I own a Sean Manaea jersey.
I saw him pitch when he was with the Indiana State in college on the Cape. He was nasty.
This is the kind of bid that gets thrown around when Manaea gets called up. you know, and with, you know, it's one thing with a hitter when you know, you're at this point, we're fairly confident which of the big name prospects are going to get called up on the hitting side in the next 3 months. But, you know, on the pitching side, there's just a lot of uncertainty. Anything can happen to a pitcher in 2 months while he's waiting to get the call up, and blowing that much money on someone who not only needs to, not only paying the freight of what you would need to pay when he comes up, but paying it now and taking on the risk of him either getting hurt or being terrible in over the next 2 months is just way too much.
Agreed. Yeah, I you know, the other thing about Tout is, you know, so you have mixed, or I'm sorry, AL, there's a 4-man reserve list compared to 6 for mixed, and I don't mind using one slot like this, but there is, it does kind of bog you down, and unless there's a certainty, like for example, I last year I took Addison Russell and Tout Wars NL, and that obviously worked out very well, and I had him down for, you know, I think it was like less than a month, right, Brett, before he was called up. And yeah, you know, some thought that was aggressive, but you know, we kind of knew that even though the batting average would be low, you know, he was a player, and you kind of knew he'd be good, to your point. 2 years ago, I sat on Michael Franco in Tout NL, again, as a reserve pick, but that just didn't work out. And you do kind of get to that painful point where you need flexibility with a 4-man reserve, and you kind of have to make the decision like, well, I know he's Michael Franco. I know he's eventually going to be good, but you know, how long do I sit on him? And that's some of where that this kind of plays out. So, yeah, nothing wrong with the stash to me, but, yeah, I would agree that the timing is off and the bid's a little bit high.
Mm-hmm.
So next up was Joey Ricard, and here the bids were aggressive. I know we talked about him a little bit in mixed, Brett, but I wanted to kind of discuss the situation here a little bit more. So Ricard beat out Hyung-Soo Kim, and he's a starter, but it appears that Kim is still on the roster, and the Orioles were trying to work out an arrangement where they sent him to the minors, and his contract doesn't allow it, and you know, he, you know, rightfully within his rights, refused to do so. I'm just kind of curious how this situation plays out, because if Ricard plays every day, he certainly has value in AL only. And if the on base skills hold up from last year, in particular in an OBP league like Tout, he has value. But do we see Ricard playing, or do we see Kim at some point getting the opportunity to get at least some starts in Baltimore?
Yeah, I do not see Ricard playing for a significant amount of time. I still think I'd be surprised if he got 300 at bats this year. You know, the Orioles have, whether they're great options or not, the Orioles do have some options. They could play Chris Davis in the outfield, which is obviously not ideal, but if they wanted to, they could give some playing time to either Christian Walker, or if he tears up the minors again this year, they could turn to Trey Mancini, who is one of their top offensive prospects in the system. Might be their best bat in the system right now. I don't see it. I don't buy Kim at all. But I don't think Baltimore is just going to swallow that $7 million and ship him off. They're kind of stuck with him at this point.
Yeah, well, there's also that idea. You know, I can imagine, or it's not difficult to envision how this scenario played out. Buck Showalter, likely in camp, didn't like something he saw out of Kim and decided, you know, that he wasn't going to be the starter, and that Ricard had won the job. And, you know, I just hate that idea of players, you know, winning a job in spring training. But someone along the line somewhere, you know, Baltimore's organization from a scouting perspective clearly saw Kim and, you know, doesn't have the same assessment that you do, Brett. So you have to think that somewhere along the line, you were kind of talking about this with Tomas, and certainly it's not the same level of investment. You have to think somewhere along the line they're going to give Kim an opportunity.
I would think so, and I think it would be a substantial opportunity.
Right, unless he's awful.
Yeah, and spring training is not enough to determine whether he's awful or not. So.
Right. Anything to add, George, or do you kind of echo our sentiments?
On Ricard? I could see Ricard playing for a month or two, but this is one of those situations where if the Orioles are actually in contention, it makes sense for them to make a trade midseason or try and find someone off of waivers. I mean, there are guys who get cut all the time in season, so... I think they look outside the organization. We've seen Dan Duquette do that a lot in past years. When there's an obvious hole, he's good at finding, you know, someone out there for next to nothing to come in and play, and it's worked out for them in the past. So we'll see. I like the scenario where they bring up either Mancini or Walker and move Davis to left. I think that's an option for them as well. If they want to put him in a corner, that could work. It's not an ideal situation there, certainly. And you see why they went after Dexter Fowler, so they could avoid having this happen.
Yeah, you do. And this is your monthly reminder that Hyun-Soo Kim was out-homered by 20 home runs in the KBO last year by Yumeiko Navarro.
That's not good.
No, not good.
No, Kim seems... You know, his profile is different than a number of people that come from Korea in that the average and in particular the contact skills are not as extreme as we've seen from others. But, you know, without a doubt, I don't have a lot of faith in him either. I think even the high-end scenario to me is kind of a marginal regular. But this conversation goes beyond, like, you know, what we think of Kim and more what we think, at least to me, and what the Orioles are going to do with Kim.
I think he'll be on the roster most of the year. Or
yeah,
the whole
it's just
year,
a question if he'll play.
I don't know.
We're down in the depths of ale only. None of this is particularly exciting. We can move on to kind of the third and final guy I just want to talk about a little bit for an only, and that's Terrence Gore.
Yes.
So Terrence Gore, he went for $101. Nobody else bid, and we're back to the situation with these bids where we're all kind of feeling it out. But I kind of, in an AL only, you know, just for that pure speed play and the last guy on a bench, you don't make a move like this in a mixed league. But in the AL only, I like the idea of a Gore who can steal bases. He'll play a little bit of defense in the late innings. He'll pinch run. If there's an American League organization that's going to run a guy out there like this, no pun intended, I know that's not like me, for those kind of situations, it's Terrence Gore, you know, it's the Royals. So do we see, you know, I know with Jared Dyson coming back at some point from his oblique injury that Gore could go to the minors. Do we see any potential for this kind of role with Gore, even with Dyson coming back, or is this a pipe dream?
It's absolutely a pipe dream. They're not going to let Terrence Gore bat at the major league level. He would be the worst hitter in the majors in probably the last 50 years. No joke.
Even worse than Billy Hamilton?
Boo.
He makes Billy Hamilton look like Ted freaking Williams. There is no way that the Royals are going to let him play. There is no way that he's on the roster with Jerrod Dyson because it is just the biggest waste of a roster spot in the world.
He's an insurance guy right now who you can pinch run. I agree with that statement.
Yeah, he'll be back up in September.
Yeah. He's
once Dyson gets healthy.
He's so much fun, though, just from a pure baseball. Like, this is a fun guy to have in an organization because what he does is so different from, you know, you don't see a lot of guys who are just pinch runners.
It's
true. But to go back then to the fantasy conversation about this, it seems to me that, you know, the bid here was a mistake, and you know, especially, you know, this goes back to the idea of stashing a guy with four-man reserves until September, which, you know, barring multiple injuries to the Royals, it sounds like that's what's going to happen.
I can't believe Ricky Nolasco got picked up.
He's going to pitch. What's the matchup this week? Because, you know, in Tout, the risk to me there isn't the pickup. It's that you have to start him.
I think it's Kansas City, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not spectacular. A team that makes contact against a guy who pitches to contact.
I think it's against Chris Young on Saturday.
Well, I mean, that could be okay. But, yeah, I'm... AL only is just so hard to kind of gauge. You know, like Kurt Casale went for five, and you know, I kind of wrote about him. It's like, well, look, I don't love Kurt Casale, but a guy who could split catching at bats, you know, in an AL only situation, that's fine. That's an acceptable bid.
I like Kelvin Herrera as a zero dollar bid.
Zero dollar bid, sure, I do too. And I made the point in the article. You know, I made this point about Travis Wood in only formats. You gotta take these relievers. You gotta take guys who can help you, and don't get sucked into. And you know, I even see experts do it. Don't get sucked into these bottom of the barrel starters like Nolasco if you can avoid it. Go, you know, unless whoever picked up Nolasco sees it, like go for somebody in relief. You know, John Axford is zero. I don't love Axford, but you know, again, I prefer to make the play on the reliever like Axford or Mike Brin or Mark Lowe than I would on a Ricky Nolasco.
Is it weird that there are two Matt Duffys?
It's very weird, and I don't like it.
That's not the weirdest thing, though. Have you guys seen how incredibly skinny Kenta Maeda is?
I'm watching this as we speak.
Have you, George, have you witnessed this?
Yeah, over under 130 pounds.
I don't know. He looks like a not so stiff wind could knock him over.
Yeah. Like peak Clay Buchholz. Remember Clay Buchholz? Is he still? He's still kind of thin, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of that is you got Casher on the mound, and Casher's a giant, and he's pitching Maeda. He's pitching Maeda now, so there is a contrast here. But yeah, he looks Maeda looks like a stick.
Maeda is literally as skinny as the eye in the Verizon ad behind him.
This. We could do like the last 10 minutes of the show on, you know, you're so skinny, but I don't know if we're going to go.
No, okay. I think it's time to wrap up.
It's time to wrap up. Yeah, this has been a long one. It's been our first week doing the Fab Log, so we'll probably tighten this up a little bit as we go forward.
Did he just hit a home run? Oh, my God.
You're a little bit ahead of me, but it looks like he did.
Oh, my God. He just hit a home run off Andrew Cashner.
I have no
Everybody shares gets of, a home run off Andrew Cashner.
I have no shares of Cashner this year for the first time like in 4 years, and I feel very happy about that.
Wait, I don't have the game on. Kenta Maeda just hit a home run?
Yes, Kenta Maeda just hit a home run off of Andrew Cashner.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Everyone's hitting them these days for the Dodgers. Holy... Oh, San Diego. My God. It's going to be a rough year.
I know.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back and wrap things up. Thank you for listening to episode 85 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the entire BP Fantasy team on baseballperspectives.com all season long. If you sign up for a super premium membership, it's just a little bit more, but you get exclusive access to the Bat Signal, which is our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question about your team. If you've got a trade question, for example, I know you do, and if you don't right now, you're gonna in a little bit. So send it to us anytime, and you'll get a response within 12 hours, oftentimes much faster than that. It's a really awesome service, and we're really, really happy to have that. So subscribe today at Baseball Perspectives. Finally, don't forget, follow us on Twitter. You can email us at flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. For Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show next week, so long, everybody.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.